White shapes flash across a dark screen. Letters resolve into the words, Rogue Pictures. A woman in silhouette stands in front of a burning inferno, her arms upturned, embracing the moment. The logo of Intrepid Pictures. Rogue Pictures and Intrepid Pictures present a Vertigo Entertainment and Mandate Pictures production. A caption appears.
What you are about to see is inspired by true events. According to the FBI, there are an estimated 1.4 million violent crimes in America each year. On the night of February 11th, 2005, Kristen McKay and James Hoyt left a friend's wedding reception and returned to the Hoyt family's summer home. The brutal events that took place there are still not entirely known.
A vehicle drives slowly along a street of white, clapboard houses. The picture fades in and out after each passing residence. The sun rises above the roof of one detached house. Another detached house stands in a small copse of trees. The vehicle speeds up as it leaves the town. It passes an isolated house and the picture darkens. Now time has passed and the vehicle drives past a few lamplit homes.
911, what's your emergency? 911, what's your emergency? Are you there?
There are people here.
Okay, calm down. Where are you? What's your address?
I don't know.
Are you in danger?
Yes.
What's your name?
Jordan, please help.
Okay, can you tell me what street you're on?
I don't know where we are.
Jordan, who are you with?
We went in the house. We found people.
You found who, Jordan? Who did you find?
There's blood on the walls. Help us.
Jordan,
help
calm
us.
Down.
It's everywhere.
Jordan, what happened?
There's blood everywhere.
The title, The Strangers. A man has his hand on a steering wheel. 30 years of age, neatly cut brown hair, the man stares ahead mutely. Next to him, a woman with long, dark brown hair combed in a lustrous pleat looks up at traffic lights above them, which glow red. They are at a junction of a dark, empty street in a small town. The lights turn green. They drive on. The saloon drives along a deserted, winding road. The headlights pick out the rickety balustrade of a porch as the car roars past in the depth of night. The saloon pulls into the driveway of a substantial lamplit property. As the man gets out and slams the door, the young woman with tears in her eyes starts. Watching the man collect the mail from the mailbox, she lights a cigarette. She seems tense as she waits for him to get back in the car. Carrying their luggage, he unlocks the front door. The young woman, Kristen, in a figure-hugging, strappy, low-backed, lilac floor-length gown, waits outside, clutching her evening bag. Holding her skirt, she cautiously mounts the front steps. The man looks around the unlit interior. She puts out her cigarette on the floor of the front porch. As he paces, she comes through the door and closes it. A record is playing. There are red rose petals scattered on the bedspread. Champagne is cooling on ice with two flutes nearby and two places set for dinner with two tall candlesticks.
When did you do all this?
Today. With Mike. When you were with the girls. I thought you'd like it.
The alabaster-skinned woman looks somberly at the rose petals on the bed and the bedside table.
You can have this room. I'm going to get set up out there.
She goes to the bathroom, where he is staring at the petals in the bath.
Yeah, I don't know about the top. I didn't know if the rose is going first or after.
Yeah, I don't know either.
He takes a bottle of champagne from a second ice bucket.
Here. Let me.
He invites her to turn around and carefully unfastens her zipper and necklace.
Thank you.
Okay.
Pursing her lips tightly, she goes into the bathroom and draws a bath. Hunched over in a chair, he makes a phone call.
Hey Mike, it's me. We're at the house now. I know you're fucking drunk. Maybe you're asleep now, but... I'll tell you when I see you, but things... They didn't work out the way I planned at all. I'm gonna need you to come out here and get me. Just whenever you wake up in the morning, I'm gonna give you the car. Just call me when you get this, okay? I know it's a bitch to come all the way out here, but... Sorry, this sucks. Okay.
He rings off, shaking his head in frustration. The woman sits in her bubble bath, her knees pulled up in front of her, and heaves a sigh. In a flashback to the wedding they attended, she, Kristen McCain, happily sips champagne. Glancing across the room, she sees the man, James Hoyt, approach, his head bowed, hands thrust in his trouser pockets, looking preoccupied. She smiles again as he sits down next to her, smiling politely at the people at the table. He cracks a smile without knowing why, and she bursts into a fit of laughter. She turns back to look at James, and as he cups her cheek, she nestles against it. He carries her out to where cars are parked.
Dancing right now.
Jerk.
You're a jerk.
You're a jerk.
They kiss before he sets her down.
Oh, it's freezing. Let's get in the car. What?
I just want to tell you something.
What do you want to tell me?
He produces a blue ring box. Her eyes fill with dismay. In the bath, she sits with her head on her knees. He brings a tub of ice cream to the table and sits down. He slams the ring box on the table. Her long hair flowing down her shoulders, Kristen zips up the lilac dress. He opens the ice cream tub and takes out a large scoop and spoons it into his mouth. Kristen appears out of the bedroom door at the end of the hall. She moves towards him, puts her cigarettes on the table, and sits down, facing him. He sighs deeply and looks up with a weak smile.
nice, everything you did. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
He places the ring box between them.
Here. I can't keep it. I can't take it back. Please. Just take it, please.
He reaches for the ice bucket and undoes the silver paper on top of the champagne bottle. She averts her eyes awkwardly. He takes a sip from the bottle. He passes her the bottle, and she takes a swig.
Clothes are in the bedroom if you want.
I want to wear this. I only get to wear it tonight. It makes me feel pretty.
You are pretty.
She eyes him sharply.
I'm so sorry it wasn't the way you thought it would be. Really sorry.
What do we do now?
He nods empathetically. As he gets up, she seizes his hand.
James,
please
talk to me.
Oh, Christ. This is embarrassing.
He puts the long playing record back on and remains standing at the turntable. She stands up and gently touches his back. She slips her hands around his chest and lays her cheek on his back. As she turns him around to face her, he keeps his eyes lowered, and they hug each other tightly. He cups her lower back, raises his head to look at her face, and she cups his cheek. Their hug gets tighter. He pulls the dress back from her long, slender thighs and eases off her thong. She sits back and watches him slip it off, then unfastens his belt. They both turn towards the door.
What is it, like 4 in the morning?
A clock on the wall shows it's 4:05. James unlocks the heavy wooden front door. Kristen keeps her distance. A female with long fair hair is on the unlit porch, her face entirely in shadow.
Hi.
Hello.
James tries the porch light, but it doesn't work.
Is Tamara here?
No, you got the wrong house.
You sure?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Kristen peers at the faceless woman.
See you later. That was weird.
Yeah. I
people get lost out here. Should I go get her?
She seemed okay. I mean, I think she would have said if she wasn't.
James screws the porch light bulb back in. They go inside. The house is being watched by an unseen presence. Inside, the stylus has reached the end of the record. Kristen, sitting at the table, glances across at James, who is on the sofa, looking preoccupied. She glances at her empty cigarette packet.
I'm out of cigarettes.
I'll go get you some more.
I didn't mean that. You don't have to. I'll just go to sleep. I'm tired anyway.
No, you won't.
Try.
It's all right. I don't want to drive for a while anyway. Let me light you a fire.
He boils some old newspaper and puts it in the grate, then places some pre-cut logs on top. Kristen comes over as he stacks firewood.
I was thinking when you were taking a bath. I want you to take the car back tomorrow.
What do you mean?
I don't think a road trip's a good idea right now. I called Mike. He's gonna come out and get me in the morning.
Are you sure that's what you want?
Yeah. Okay, I'll be back. If you want, we can talk some more. Don't have to.
Nods her agreement.
Okay. You and me okay here?
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Okay.
Thanks for lighting me a fire.
Sure.
He stands outside in the near darkness and swigs back more champagne. He tosses the near-empty bottle away. Inside, Kristen sits by the fire, now burning brightly. James reverses. Kristen pulls her long legs up under her chin, hugging them to her chest. James drives back along the winding road. In the house, Kristen puts the record back on and pushes her hair back from her face as she walks to the table. She opens the ring box and takes out the diamond solitaire, quickly shutting the box. She slips the ring on the fourth finger of her left hand. She looks at the ring on her hand, then tries to take it off, but it won't budge. She touches the piano keyboard while two candle flames flicker on the table. She lies back on the sofa, mournfully contemplating the ring on her finger, then places a hand behind her head and shuts her eyes. At the kitchen sink, she opens a bottle and sips the soft drink. As she drinks, she studies the hand-drawn height chart on the wall of James and its brother Stephen. She starts, then turns towards the door. She puts down the bottle and moves slowly towards the carved double front door. She walks towards the door.
Hello?
Is Tamara home?
You already came by here.
Are you sure?
Kristen locks the deadbolt. With her back to the door and her hand on the bolt, she contemplates the room. She moves slowly across the dimly lit entranceway, passing the piano, looking around her. She steps warily towards the curtains and peers out, seeing a light on above a gray metal barn, but elsewhere, nothing but darkness. She closes the curtains and looks towards the fireplace, which is suddenly full of smoke. She tries to dispel the smoke with her hand, then leaning in, she shuts the flue to stop more smoke coming in. She turns sharply towards the smoke alarm on the ceiling. She straightens and moves underneath the alarm. Seizing a chair, she reaches up, her long, slender fingers stretching up to turn it off. The alarm twists off, falling to the floor. She turns to the door. She steps down from the chair, her terrified eyes fixed on the door. The smoke alarm is on the floor, its sensor shining. She brings her phone from her bag. Curtains ripple. She unzips her bag and brings out her charger cable. On all fours, she crawls across the floor to plug it into a wall socket. She tries to power up the phone. She turns towards the door, gulping back her fear. She goes into the bedroom and picks up a landline phone. She changes into jeans and a plaid shirt as she talks.
James, where are you? That girl came back. That girl, I mean, she keeps knocking on the door. What do you mean? I heard her voice. No, I didn't open the door.
She throws her gown on the bed.
I don't know. The battery's dead. I'm charging it right now. Okay. I just want you to come home, okay? No, I'm fine, but just, you know, hurry. How far away are you? Okay. Will you just stay on the phone with me? James?
The phone goes dead. She lights a cigarette. She stands in the spacious kitchen dining room, looking around, unaware of a man in a hooded mask skulking in a corner of the room, watching her. She takes a glass from a cupboard and fills it with water from the tap. She takes a peek out of the window above the sink. She tosses the cigarette butt into the sink. She turns around to face the room and sips some more water. The man has vanished.
James?
She looks towards the sound. In a drawer, she finds a large knife. Holding the knife at below waist height, she creeps out of the kitchen corner. She lurches towards the house phone. As she dials, she is seen through a shelf unit room divider, as if she is being watched. She steps slowly past the shelf unit and sees the flickering flames in the fireplace, reflected on the upright side of the piano. Her eyes move towards the carved, double front door. She grabs the back of a chair. Looking down, she sees the smoke alarm unit on it and brings her fingers to her mouth in silent terror. She looks towards the door. She bends down to her mobile phone and sees it's gone. She rocks on her thighs, trying to keep calm. The drawn curtains are swaying. She pulls herself to her feet and slowly moves towards the curtain window, gripping the knife in her hand. She slides a sharp blade through a thin gap in the curtains. She withdraws the blade. Swallowing hard, she steps closer and draws aside the curtain. The man in a cotton hooded mask slams a hand onto the window. Kristen backs away, colliding with a chair. The record player judders back into motion. Kristen's eyes freeze as the deadbolt in the door turns. One side of the double door opens slightly. She creeps towards the part open door, the blade glinting in her hand, and tries to peep out. Doll face mask peers at her. She sinks to the floor and rebolts the door. Hurtling through the house, she tries to hide under the bed, but the gap isn't high enough. Sitting up, she stares at the open bedroom door. She reaches up for the bedside lamp and tries to turn it off. She slams it on the floor and the light goes out. She tosses it down and looks up at the doorway. She starts to creep alongside the bed, the blade pointed in front of her. She lets out a gasp. James appears in the doorway.
Jimmy.
Kristen.
There's someone out there.
There's
somebody.
What?
Stop. What's up in your hand?
He takes the knife from her. She slams the door shut and pushes an armchair against it.
Stop. Stop. Come here. Sit down. Sit down. I know there's somebody out there.
I saw a man at the back door, and he's wearing a mask.
What do you mean? Like a ski mask? What?
No fucking mask!
Okay,
I don't
okay.
know.
Now, calm down.
Jimmy, I'm so scared.
Okay.
James picks up the knife and pushes the chair from the door.
Don't go out there, please. Don't.
Please. Stop. I'm right here. Stop.
He opens the door and peers out into the lamp-lit hallway.
No one out here. Nobody. Come here. Come here.
Tears rolling down her cheeks, she follows him out. He opens the bathroom door, looking into the darkness. He pulls back the shower curtain. The bath is clean and empty. James walks on through the house, not noticing Kristen's phone burning in the fire. They wander through an unlit storeroom.
So what do you want to do?
I don't know.
Kristen.
Kristen moves across the room and steps up to a high window.
Kristen, what is it?
James climbs up next to her.
Staring at us like that. They want something.
The blonde woman is standing 20 meters from the house.
Shit.
What?
I'm gonna leave my phone in the car. I'm gonna go get it.
You can't go out there.
Why?
One of them came in here and took my phone.
Chris and nobody came in here.
They turn from each other to look out of the window.
She's gone.
James glances at Kristen's still face and steps down from the window. He opens the back door and steps down into the empty yard. He walks towards his car and sees the windscreen has been smashed. Holding his car keys, he spins around but sees nothing. He walks on towards his car. He reaches in through an open window towards the handbrake. Kristen paces behind the double door, chewing a nail. James sits behind the wheel, puts the car in reverse, and finds his tire is flat. He picks up empty cigarette packs from the floor of the car.
Shit.
As he leans over the steering wheel, a hand reaches out for his jacket collar. He twists around in terror and waves the knife. He leaps out of the car. He looks out into the dark copse. Standing by the car, twisting the knife in his hand, he turns and sees the blonde female, her face masked, standing at a distance.
What do you want? Can I get the fuck out of here?
A second figure runs past behind some trees.
James. Kristen, go back inside.
What's happening?
Kristen.
Kristen looks out towards the trees.
Kristen, go.
She runs back inside. The blonde female has vanished. James walks towards the spot where she was standing. The knife held loose in his hand, he peers around him into the differing depths of darkness. He turns back towards the house, walking evenly past the trees. Walking up the front yard, he steps up to the carved door. His eyes flit from side to side as he looks out into the darkness. His back to the rustically carved door. He turns the door handle.
Jesus Christ, what are you doing?
I'm sorry, I'm waiting for you.
I want you to get your things, put your shoes on. Can you find your phone?
No, I told you they took my phone.
I put it in your bag.
James, it's not in the bag. I plugged it into the wall, and when I came back, it was gone.
I don't understand. We checked the whole house, and nobody in here. I see your hand.
Sat at the table, he takes off his black tie, looks at her bleeding palm, then binds it with the tie.
What are you thinking?
Since we've been here, I haven't heard a dog bark. Car pass. Us and them.
They clasp hands.
Why are they doing this?
Listen, I don't want you to think about that, okay? Don't think about it. Doesn't matter right now. We don't need a reason if they come through that door.
He cups her cheek, and she shuts her eyes, comforted by his touch. He crosses the room and spots his phone with the battery removed, lying on some rose petals. He picks it up.
What is it?
It's my phone. We gotta get out of here.
His worried face is being watched through the shelf divider. They walk down the path away from the house to get into his car. As he reverses, a vehicle careers into view behind them, headlights blazing. Pickup truck draws closer. The lights dim, revealing a female wearing a pin-up doll mask at the wheel.
Get out the car.
Through the hole in the windscreen, they both see the hooded man. The truck crashes into the back of James's car. As the truck reverses, they scramble out and pelt back towards the house. Pin-up girl rams the car again. Slamming his hand on the kitchen table, he crosses to the curtain sliding back door, locking it. Kristen covers her face with her hands as James starts pulling books off the shelf.
James, we need a gun.
I'm looking.
Does your dad have a gun?
Kristen, I'm looking! There's one here when I was a kid, he always hit it.
He reaches up to the top of the unit and finds part of a shotgun. He drops it on the shelf with a sigh. He reaches up again and finds the gun barrel.
Let's go to the bedroom.
He leads the way into the bedroom and they both stand frozen as they stare at the words "Hello, hello," daubed in condensation on the window. James peers into the bathroom. They retreat into a closet.
What are you doing?
Looking for bullets.
James rifles through shoeboxes, pulling them down from the shelves, Kristen joining him in the search.
I got him.
He tips out some shells from a shoebox. He reaches for the gun parts to assemble them. Kristen, watching him in alarm.
How do I use this thing?
What do you mean?
I'm not sure I even know how to load it.
But you said you used to hunt with your dad.
No, I never did. It was something I said.
Kristen stares at him, her brow furrowed. He tightens the gun barrel, and they load his pockets with the bullet shells. They go towards the front door.
Now open the door, and I just want you to run, okay?
An axe smashes through the door.
Lock the door!
James swipes away ornaments from the top of the upright piano, and they push it towards the splintered door. The axe impales the piano top. Kristen crouches down, loading a shell into the shotgun as James throws a chair at the hole in the door. James picks up the shotgun. He fires at the hooded man outside the door. James helps Kristen up. James knocks a computer monitor onto the floor. They pile packing boxes against the door and hunker down. With a look of determination, James takes off his jacket, rolling up the sleeves of his white shirt, then reloads the gun.
We're not gonna fucking die here. We're gonna sit here. We're gonna wait for the fucking cops to come or whatever, but I'm not gonna fucking die.
He aims the gun towards the hallway, and Kristen peers in terror over the top of the boxes. The curtains across the sliding back door waft in a light breeze, and a different record has been placed on the turntable.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Outside, a Jeep Cherokee drives up to the property and stops. The driver, in his 30s, dressed in a dark suit and a crisp white shirt, dials a number.
Yo! Jimmy James, what's up, buddy? It's Mike. Listen, man, I'm outside. I got here early. I just decided to come out and, you know, just be here for you as soon as I possibly could, because you know how I like to wait on you hand and fucking foot.
What the fuck?
A brick shatters his windscreen. Mike gets out of the car, raising both arms in terror as he looks towards the dimly lit house. Watched from behind some bushes, he walks from his Jeep towards the house, passing James's rammed and smashed car. He comes along the dark back porch.
Hello? Jimmy?
Kristen?
He bends down and picks up a lead pipe from the floor. As he starts to go inside, blonde-haired doll face appears out of the darkness. Mike pulls back the curtains covering the sliding glass door. He sees a shattered wine glass on the floor, the pieces arranged in a tidy pile. He wanders into the dining area, where three table candles are burning. He spots the record player.
I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole.
He advances across the room with wary steps.
But Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied.
Clutching the lead pipe in his hand, he passes a lopsided lampshade as he starts down the narrow hallway leading to the bedroom and bathroom, looking from left to right. Seen from behind, he slows to a stop. From the front, he takes a deep breath, and the hooded man appears in a blur behind him.
Very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest. Wanted me to have.
Staring at Mike's back, the hooded man cocks his head to the side. Mike takes several slow steps forward.
And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without.
The hooded man follows him, raising up an axe clutched in his hands.
Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Mike stops and half turns his head as the record ends, then keeps on walking.
Hello.
James shoots him dead. He drops the gun in horror, seeing the lower half of an inert body lying on the hallway floor. Above the body, blood splatter spills down the wall. Kristen cowers next to him.
Kristen, I shot him. He didn't have a mask.
What?
Why didn't he have a fucking mask?
What do you mean he didn't have a mask?
James crawls out of their hiding place and finds Mike with his eye blown out, lying in a pool of dark red blood. James's head sinks to the floor.
What?
Olga.
What is it?
Stay there.
James, answer me.
What?
He pushes her to the floor.
Get off of me!
Beside himself with remorse, he slams his fist into the doorframe. Kristen shuffles towards him to comfort him as he clutches his head with both hands. He pulls himself to his feet and lurches into the hallway with the gun, trying not to step on the body. Kristen crawls around Mike's body. She struggles to her feet, her hand on her mouth. His shirt stained with blood, he steadies himself on the corner of the shelf unit. She follows him as he reloads the gun.
I'm gonna go outside. I want you to hide somewhere.
What are you talking about?
There's an old radio out in the barn. I'm gonna try and call for help.
I don't know what else to do. It's okay. I'm gonna come right back for you.
He pulls back the porch door curtain, the word killer daubed in red letters on the glass.
Listen, I want you to go. I want you to hide there. I'll keep them away. I'll come find you.
James, no.
Kristen,
I want to come with
be
you.
Okay, I promise. I'll be fine.
He runs out of the door and heads towards the metal barn with a light above the door. He glances back at Kristen.
Be careful, James.
Kristen comes out onto the porch and looks over to the barn. James makes his way through the sparse trees outside. Kristen goes back into the softly lit room, full of books, paintings, and photographs, and looks about her, not knowing which way to turn. Outside, James throws himself down at the foot of a tree, gun at the ready. One of the female strangers emerges from the old barn, carrying a flashlight. The figure scans the area with the powerful beam. James rolls onto his front and aims the gun. The masked female points the beam in his direction, dazzling him, and he looks away. The man in the hooded mask lunges towards him. Kristen's face crumples. She paces in despair. She comes out onto the porch. She sees nothing but the light above the barn door. A child's swing moves in the darkness, a slither of light catching the seat as it swings. Kristen sinks down onto the floor of the porch, with her back to the curtained glass door. She peers into the darkness, but sees nothing. She hugs her arms, her knees drawn up to her chest, her bare feet pressed together, her head tilted forward. The hooded man appears in the house, his large black eye holes turned in her direction. The hooded stranger looks in the direction of the open porch door. Her face glistening with sweat, Kristen senses a presence, hears a wheezing breath. She gets to her feet, skips down the porch steps, and runs from the house. She trips over a ditch and falls. She drags herself out of the ditch. She clutches her ankle in agony. Her bare feet raised off the ground, she crawls on all fours through the sparse woodland. Unaware that Pinup Girl is stalking her with a knife in her hand. Falling on her front, Kristen sits up and looks back at the house. Pinup Girl has vanished. Rolling back over, she resumes her crawl towards the barn. In the doorway of the barn, she pulls herself up and finds a flashlight. She shines the light on a tool rack and sees an axe is missing.
James.
She hobbles further in, shining the light around the cluttered barn. The beam picks out a ventilator fan. She bumps into a wheelbarrow. She turns towards the unidentifiable sound. In a far corner of the barn, she spots the old radio transmitter and radio mic on a work desk with the lamp on. She moves towards the desk, grabbing the pale gray desktop microphone. She tries to tune the radio.
Hello?
She retunes again. She is viewed from behind as she sits at the desk. She sinks to the floor, the gray transmitter microphone in her hand. Turning, she sees nothing. Crouching behind the desk, her gaze darts around the dark room. She peeks over the desk. She brings the mic to her lips.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Pin-up girl rises up from behind the desk and stares with its blank but menacing expression.
Help me.
Pin-up girl smashes the radio with a pickaxe. Propelling herself along her belly, Kristen crawls back to the house. She looks around in terror at the sounds coming from all directions. She looks ahead at the house, still 50 meters away. She crawls towards it, dragging herself along on her elbows, a silent presence moving alongside. She looks at the curtains across the porch door and spots a masked figure lurking behind some trees. The figure strides away behind the trees. Keeping her head low, Kristen crawls on towards the door with the barn behind her. She sits up and looks back at the barn. She sees Pinup Girl emerging trance-like from the barn. She looks to her right and sees blonde-haired Dollface sitting on the child swing, staring right at her. Kristen crawls on along the grass. Looking up, she sees a vehicle engulfed by flames. She presses her face into the ground with tears glistening on her cheeks. She sits up and looks back at the barn, but there is no sign of Pinup Girl, and Dollface has vanished from the moving swing. A few feet from the house, Kristen staggers up and hops the rest of the way. She reaches the porch steps. She hobbles into the main room, falling against the dining table. Her every move watched, she hauls herself around the table, leaning on one of the dining chairs. She collides with the shelf unit, knocking over some of the ornaments on display. She hops to the hallway, where Mike's body has lost more blood. Clutching the dado rail, she pulls herself along, her shoulder knocking a picture frame from the wall. She keeps on going, only able to put her weight on one foot. The lights go off, leaving just the glow of the fire. She reaches the main room, where a lampshade sits at a tilt. The firelight is reflected on the side of the piano. She peers towards the smashed-in front door and the view of the yard outside. She looks around, her face racked with tension. She turns slowly to the sound of the piano and sees the hooded man come through the front door and appear not to notice her as he moves off into another part of the house. Kristen slips into a pantry, carefully shutting the louvre door behind her and pressing herself against the wall, keeping the main room in full view. She watches the man come back into view. She presses her lips together to stop any sound escaping. The hooded man in a white shirt and loosely fixed tie and brown suit stops in front of the pantry door, as if he is looking straight at her, and her mouth opens in a silent scream. He walks on and sits down at the dining table. Kristen peers through the wooden slats of the pantry door. Tears fill her eyes and she presses herself back against the pantry wall. The hooded man stands up and looks around, turning towards Kristen, as if he can see right through the door. He bows his head and walks off with a sprightly step. Kristen gulps with relief, then ventures closer to the pantry door. Dollface appears in front of the door. She slashes the slats of the door, and Kristen tries to fend her off. she sinks down against the wall. Blonde-haired dollface suddenly goes. Kristen opens the door, which now has a large gap in the slats where dollface had torn them out. She sees her tormentor standing over the dining table, her long hair falling down her shoulders. Kristen watches her pick up the ring box and stroke it with her thumb. She turns sharply to face Kristen, her egg-shaped eye holes black. Kristen steps closer. Dollface puts the box down.
He's gonna kill you.
With her clown-like red-cheeked gaze, Dollface touches a knife on the table, slowly spinning it around with her fingers. She slides the blade underneath the table mat. As Kristen pulls open a drawer and searches for a knife, Dollface picks up her knife as Kristen finds a much smaller knife.
Why are you doing this to us?
Her black eye holes and childlike smile taunting Kristen, Dollface slowly runs the sharp tip of the long knife across the top of the table. She leans towards Kristen, her fixed smile becoming more menacing. James is thrown into the room through the sliding glass door, and he crawls along the floor. The hooded man follows him in with a shotgun and looks across at Kristen wielding the small knife.
You're gonna die.
Kristen turns away.
Kristen, run!
She limps down the hallway, with pinup girl watching. As Kristen runs towards the bedroom, James tries to get up. In the bedroom, Kristen crawls across to the window, but it won't open. The bedroom door opens and Kristen's shaking hand holds up the small knife. She moves towards the door. The lights in the bedroom come on, revealing the cozily decorated room full of paintings and family photos. Kristen makes for the open doorway, holding up the knife. The hooded stranger grabs her and slams her against a wall. She crumples at his feet. The man bends down and picks up her feet, dragging her along the floor of the hallway on her back. Still conscious, Kristen grabs a passing door frame as she is dragged alongside Mike's body. She tries to dig her nails into the walls and the skirting board, but to no avail. The man drags her into the main room, and she digs her nails into the floorboards. Darkness. A partial view of rose petals on the wooden floor and a pair of male hands bound together. Pinup girl opens the curtains, letting the daylight in. Outside, all is still. A disused basketball hoop is attached to the side of the barn. The carved front door is half open, offering a bucolic view of the yard. Tied to a chair with rope and dressed in her long lilac gown, Kristen struggles to free herself. Next to her, on another chair, James, with his jacket back on, has blood streaking down his face. The two of them sit facing the three strangers.
Because you were home.
Dollface answers. The man turns to Dollface and then looks back at James and Kristen. Kristen rocks her body, trying desperately to loosen the ropes. Pinup girl walks off as James looks wretchedly at Kristen. She places her manacled hands on James's knee, his ring on her finger. She turns to look at him. He nods at her, his eyes full of tears. The two strangers watch them through their black eye holes.
I love you.
James and Kristen acknowledge their love with sad smiles, bringing their foreheads close. Now they both lower their eyes, anticipating what is coming. Dollface places a large kitchen knife on the shag pile carpet. She throws off her mask and kneels at James and Kristen's feet. The man turns to Pinup Girl, who slowly removes her mask. The man pulls off his hooded mask, revealing a head of brown hair. His face visible to the couple, Kristen watches him, but James doesn't look up. The man kicks Dollface's out of the way. Pinup Girl's mask lies next to the record player. The man picks up the knife from the carpet. He stands in front of them.
No. You don't have to do this. You can stop now. You. Please!
Jamie lowers his eyes fatefully.
Listen to me. You can stop now. You don't have to do
The man plunges the blade into James's gut. Outside, all is still and serene as the man goes on stabbing James. Now Pinup Girl takes the bloodied knife from the man and slides it towards James's chest, who leans into Kristen, their foreheads touching. The blonde plunges the blade into Kristen's stomach. Outside, her screams reverberate in the stillness of the morning. Two young teenage Mormon boys in white shirts and black trousers wheel their bikes along a narrow road, one of them with a backpack containing leaflets. As they walk beneath autumnal trees, the Ford pickup truck with all three strangers in it drives up to them and slows down. The petite woman lets the blonde, who was sitting in the middle, off the seat and out of the truck. She approaches the two wary-looking boys. She sees the Christian Living leaflets one of them is holding.
Can I have one? Are you a sinner?
The other boy glances suspiciously at the truck.
Sometimes.
The first boy hands over a leaflet. As the blonde woman takes it and climbs into the truck, taking her seat between the man and the brunette, the two boys continue on their way, pushing their bikes.
It'll be easier next time.
The truck drives off. Darkness. The boys stare at the heart-shaped hole in James's shattered windscreen. They walk up to the front door of the house and peer in. They have left their bikes lying on the asphalt outside. They walk into the room and see the needle stalling on the turntable. They see the blue ring box on the table strewn with rose petals, the blood stain on the wall, and the bloodied knife on the floor. They see a shotgun on the kitchen counter. The first boy sees James lying on the floor by an upturned table, his eyes half closed. The other boy finds Kristen lying on her back on the floor, her pale lilac gown stained rust red. He crouches down with some leaflets in his hand and reaches out to Kristen, lying next to Mike. She grabs his hand. The picture cuts to black. Written and directed by Brian Bertino. Produced by Doug Davison, Roy Lee, Nathan Kahane. Executive producers Kelly Conop, Joe Drake, Sonny Malhi. Executive producers Trevor Macy, Mark D. Evans. Director of Photography, Peter Sova, ASC. Production designer, John D. Kretschmer. Editor, Kevin Greuterch. Liv Tyler. Scott Speedman. Gemma Ward. Kip Weeks. Laura Margolis. Glenn Howerton. Casting by Lindsay Hayes Kroger, CSA, David H. Rauraport, CSA. Co-producer Thomas J. Bush. Music by Tom and Dandy. Music supervisor, Season Kent. Costume design, Susan Kaufman. Cast in order of appearance. Mormon Boy 1, Alex Fisher. Mormon Boy 2, Peter Clayton Luce. James Hoyt, Scott Speedway. Kristen McKay, Liv Tyler. Dollface, Gemma Ward. Man in Mask, Kip Weeks. Pinup Girl, Laura Margolis. Mike, Glenn Howerton. Production sound mixer, Jeffrey Bloomer. Boom operator, Timothy Cargoli. Utility sound, Albert Hedgepeth III. supervising sound editor Scott A. Hecker, sound effects editor Rick Romatka. Dialogue and audio dialogue replacement, ADR, supervisor, Jeff Rosin. Assistant sound editor R.W. Seeger, Foley mixer Brad Brock, Foley artist Gary Hecker. ADR mixer Jeff Gamillion, ADR recordist Philip Rogers, ADR recorded at Universal Studios, ADR voice casting Caitlin McKenna. Re-recording mixers Marty D. Humphrey, CAS, Chris M. Jacobson, CAS. Re-recorded at the Dub Stage. Temp music editor Lee Scott. Music editor Sherry Ozeki. Guitar and electronics G.E. Stinson. Guitar and effects Jeremy Drake. Cello Jessica Catron. Engineer Todd Brody. Recording engineer Peter Fuchs. Orchestrator Dwight Mickelson. Music scoring mixer Jamie Steele. Conductor and copyist Alan Wilson. Score produced by Tom and Dandy. Music recorded in Bratislava with the Bratislava Symphony Orchestra. Songs: Ariel Ramirez, written and performed by Richard Buckner. Hopeful, written and performed by Jennifer O'Connor. At My Window, Sad and Lonely, written by Jeff Tweedy and Woody Guthrie, performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco. Sprout and Bean, written and performed by Joanna Newsom. My First Lover, written by Gillian Welch and David Rollins, performed by Gillian Welch. Mama Tried, written and performed by Merle Haggard. Filmed in South Carolina, pursuant to the South Carolina Motion Picture Incentive Act. Special thanks, Hilton Garden Inn, Florence, Therapy Now Restaurant, Trevor Astby, Michael Bertino Jr., Michael Connolly, Courtney Looney, Valerie Phillips, Elizabeth Rowan, Beau and Leslie Thorne. Copyright 2007, Focus Features LLC and Intrepid Pictures LLC. All rights reserved.